Because he was going to tell the kid off. That kid, how many times told you that, look, there are no more chewing gums left? And then he looks at it and it was Prakash. They were just pulling each other's legs. And Babuji started laughing like mad.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to The Journey Onwards, where I look to dive into the stories from members of my family, both from my generation and the one before, to relive their incredible personal journeys. From their memories of growing up in East Africa to leaving the town they grew up in and finding a new home here in the UK, along with everything in between. Now for me, this is really a chance to connect with my family and heritage, and I honestly appreciate that you've decided to join me in exploring this and to understand what life was like as a non-ethnic African growing up there. Now today's guest is really, really special personally for me, and doesn't really need in the way of a huge introduction because I know he will do a great job himself. But today's guest is my very own father, Dinesh Chandra Dattani, otherwise also known as Dinu Dattani and many other nicknames. Born in 1942, however, young at heart and body is something he definitely is and is known for. He came to visit me in China only 2 years ago. I still remember one day where we went on a 27,000 step walk. By the end of it, I was really tired, but it was a Friday and some of my friends were very keen to meet Mr. Dattani. And I told them, you know, we've just been out the whole day, we've done nearly 30,000 steps. I wouldn't blame him if he's tired and wants to get an early night. So I told my dad, they've asked if you want to come, but you know, don't feel the pressure. And he's like, of course I'll come and see them. And I told them, Dad, they may be drinking. That made it even more of an exciting thing. Long story short, I had to force him to go home at 2:30 when my friends were trying to keep him out for longer. So this is a man who is full of energy and heart, and I'm truly, truly glad and excited for the conversation we're about to have. So welcome, Dad.
Hi, everyone. And thanks for the introduction, Alan.
So over to you if you'd like to share something from the early years, and we can take the conversation from there.
Well, as I came to this country, I was the first guy to come here, and I had no choice but to be strong and young, as you put it, and I had to make the best of it. I think I done fairly well. Came here in 1962. Before that, I was in Jinja, but I was not born in Jinja. I was born in Kakamega, a place, very small village near Kisumu.
Okay.
Which is about 30 miles from Kakamega. And we left Kakamega in 1950. I was just barely 8 years old. And you could say I had only gone through the first form in the school. Back in East Africa, we used to start school at the age of 7. Not like in other countries, 3, 3 and a half.
Why did you leave Kakamega?
We used to have a grocery shop in Kakamega. It was mostly European grocery. We had a gold mine in Kakamega where there were a lot of Europeans. They were our customers. The business was run under partnership. My father had about 2 partners there.
So our family owned the gold mine?
No. My father had the, you might say, he could let you go and visit the gold mine because he had the upper hand. Without his permission, nobody could go there as a guest.
Wow.
To visit.
How did he get to that position?
Because he was quite good with the society, you know, not only in Asians, everyone. And he was a very liked person, even with Africans. And because we were in a English, or you might say European grocery, a lot of Europeans knew him. Because of that, I suppose he got it. But I was too young to know exactly why or how. Say, as a stranger, you come in the town and in the village and say, oh, he would like to go and visit the gold mine. And you have to take a letter from my dad, whom we call Bapuji. And Bapuji is a word used for father. But in Gujarati, it's more like respect.
Yeah.
And, he would write a letter saying, Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so coming around to visit the gold mine, just say, let somebody take them around. That's it, and done it. But the other thing was, the gold used to come out about every 10 years. from what I understand, gold wasn't something you get every year.
Mm.
In Kakamega, I think it was 10 years. But then, I think a few problems, so partnership was eventually dissolved. And my eldest brother, whom we called Pai. Pai is a respectable name for an eldest brother. Everybody would call him Pai. Pai only means brother anyway.
Mm.
But in Gujarati, it's more respected. Instead of saying the name, his name was Harilal. Now, most people, outsiders, would call him either Hari or Harilal or Haribai. But we family members all called him Pai. To us, it is more respect. And he was a very keen person in business. In 1950, I would say he was 20. And he had been to Jinja and Kampala for holidays. And he liked Jinja. So he convinced my father that we move to Jinja.
Because he liked the living conditions or the business opportunity?
Living conditions, plus it was a... Kisumu was about the same size as Jinja. And Kisumu, he used to go to Kisumu at least once or twice a week to do the shop, buying for the shop. And he liked the size of it. It is same as Kisumu. Funny enough, Lake Victoria touches Kisumu and Jinja.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose you can say from one shore to the other shore. So December we moved in, and we all moved together. The youngest person at the time was Prakash. He was just a few months old. And the youngest sister, Mina, was born in Jinja. Well, when we came to Jinja, my brother had some contacts there. And through the contacts, we took over a shop, a small shop, doing the same thing, grocery, but it was slightly smaller than the one we left in Kakamega.
Okay.
Then he, over the time, he made few friends, and there was one person in particular, Mr. Inder Singh Gill. He was more in properties and all that, and he had the biggest grocery shop in Jinja. Somehow they became very, very good close friends.
That's good.
Very close friends. And one day, Mr. Inder Singh Gill, he said, Hari, why don't you take over my shop? I particularly remember this because Pai once told us that, how he acquired the bigger shop. I said, come on, I can't afford that size of the shop. Where are we going to get the money from? And at that time, this friend, he said, have I asked you for money? He said, you pay me as you earn. And that was the best thing that ever happened to us in the beginning in Jinja.
Do you think there was a lot more of this sense of trust when it came to business?
Oh, yes, the trust. Mainly it was trust. It was always a word of mouth. Once I said to you or you said to me, here, there's £100. Pay me when you can. There is nothing in writing.
Hmm.
It was all done on trust, 101%, no doubt about it. So that's how we started the bigger shop. There was another big grocery shop, was owned by Mr. George. He was a Goan chef, and the name of the shop was George Brothers. He got a bit worried because we were not far from each other in the competition. And I was so keen on the business, that he put a whole lot in it. We youngsters used to go and help after school and in the evening and, to fill the shelves and all that. But Babuji and Bhai were the main people in the shop. But it just happened that something went wrong and Bhai got bone cancer in his shoulder, 1953. It took a long time. In those days, nobody even knew what cancer was. He had the doctor's treatment, painkillers. He even went to Kampala, which is 50 miles from Jinja, to go to the in a hospital. And even there, they thought, it just looks like problem with the joints and this and that. So he suffered it out about six months. Then it was really getting very bad. So Babuji decided to send him to Nairobi. Obviously, Nairobi being the biggest city in East Africa. And good hotel, good hospitals. Once he got there, they diagnosed it was a cancer. So they phoned up Babuji in Jinja and said, sorry, but this is a bit more serious than we always been thinking. It is cancer, and the only thing you can do is either send your son to UK or Mumbai, India. And then as things were, the shop was just about picking up, so we weren't doing that great, and had to pay back the person for the business and all that. And father said, well, have to do something. You can't just, because we can't afford it, we can't just leave it. Papuji went to Nairobi and decided to buy to Mumbai. Now, he couldn't stay with him in Mumbai too long because he was going to look after the shop. Though we managed with some staff, we had two or three people working in the shop, plus a younger brother to buy, Chanti, Upin's dad. He had to sort of come and help in the shop a bit more, and so did we. We knew myself, everybody, you know, in the, particularly after school. We finished school at 12:30, come home, have lunch, go to the shop. And then after a while, you know, we had to even go in the, some days we had to go to school even in the afternoon. So we do that after 4:00, back in the shop, do some of the deliveries and all that. And that's how it went on. Then Papuji came back from India and he left Pai in the hospital. When he came back, now somebody had to be with Pai in Mumbai. So my elder brother to me, you know, father sent him there to India to be with him in the, you know, anytime any help needed or what. And Ba went as well, because Ba just couldn't stay without him, you know, being the eldest son. And Babuji knew that, so he said, okay, you go there as well. And they both went to India. Now, Ba used to stay in the hospital, literally 24 hours a day, worried about him and all that. And when we started school as well in Mumbai, and anytime there was any help needed in the hospital for Ba and all that, he would go there. And after about 3-4 months, they came back, I looked so good. You thought, you would think, oh, he's
full recovery.
But that is what they say, it's the cancer, you know, it never leaves you, you get better. Then the second time when he got the attack, it was must be early 54, or mid 54. Then he came to London for an operation. He had an operation done under his right arm, and that, again, lasted a short while. Funny thing about that time, he was here in the month of June. Back in East Africa, the days used to be 7 in the morning, 7 at night. But when Bhai was here, he wrote to us and said, you know, the sun shines here even at 10:00 at night. And we used to laugh about it. How can you have a sun shining at 10:00 at night? We just laughed. And then when he came back and we, you know, talked about it, he explained and he said, this is how it is, summertime, days are longer, blah, blah, all that. Even that time, after the operation, when he came back, he was normal. But you could see from his body, he had lost a lot of weight. Because he was very fit, over 6 foot. And the third time when he got it, I think that is the time it was pretty bad. And somehow he knew that his time has come. That was in 1955, early 55. And I still remember some of his friends. Obviously, they said it afterwards, that when Hari left last time, he had told us we might never see him again.
Wow.
And that's the kind of courage he had. He never said that to anybody else. But this was afterwards. One or two of his friends said that he had talked to us like that, that we might not see me again. And some of the photographs he sent us is when this cancer had gone into his head, from the shoulder to his head. I still got one of his photographs. If you look at the head, you think somebody hit him on the head with something and he got all bumps. He sent that photograph and we were literally, you know, I mean, I was too young to know too much. I was, what, 12, 13 years old. We knew, and Ba was there again. And they were the last people to see him alive.
So you didn't see him in that state, you only saw the picture?
No, no. He looked normal with, you know, weight. He had lost a lot of weight when he went the third time to Mumbai. But the photograph he sent, I can still see and think that the guy still had a smile on his face. Can you believe? with that kind of pain. When he was in those days, there was no other treatment for cancer except the rays called ultraviolet rays. And he said to the doctor, "Well, if you have to, you have to." That was his words. He said, "If you have to, you have to."
Yeah.
And they started, okay, it used to relieve pain and all that, but he knew he was going. So he passed away sometime in August, if I remember right, 1955. Ba took it very bad, very bad. Ba used to sometimes sit there in front of you, and she would start thinking about it, and you think she's sitting there, you touch her, and she just fall down.
Oh, wow.
Because she used to lose the consciousness. With eyes open and everything, and you think she's listening to you, and suddenly you realize she's not talking or answering, and she would just faint. And then you have to throw cold water on her face and take her to bed and lie down and all that. But that went on.
Did she feel responsible or helpless that she could...
Helpless. And, you know, being the eldest son, you can imagine how would a mother feel.
Yeah.
Because in Indian society, eldest son is the pillar of the family. And to her, the pillar is gone. Bapuji felt bad as well, but he never, 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 ever showed it. Just took it in.
Did Bapuji not show it to protect you guys, protect, the rest of...
Yeah, protect the rest of the family that we have to carry on, sort of.
Yeah, yeah.
Very practical kind of person. So he just kept it to himself. Didn't do him much good, I'm sorry to say, because I passed away in 55 and Bapuji passed away in 66, exactly 11 years later. And Bapuji passed away with a heart attack. And within half an hour or so, he got the second attack. But that is how the life was, and he took it very, very badly at the time. And nobody knew how he was keeping everything to himself.
Yeah.
And Ba had strict instructions not to discuss this thing too much with other kids. And including the financial problem we had, because Bapuji had borrowed so much money for Ba's treatment. And then Ba had strict instruction not to mention that to any kids. Except, you know, Jayanti had to leave school and come back, because Jayanti was the only person who was really keen on studying. And he's the only one who never got a chance to do it. Rupin will tell you, he was always very, very keen on you doing something.
Yeah, yeah, Rupin mentioned. Rupin said.
I think that was the reason, because he wanted everybody to study. He was helping me in after school and all that, and at the times of exams, and you ask him questions, and he very nicely tell you what to do and what not to do, what is the best and this and that. But obviously, even then, because he had to leave the school early, he had only reached that much.
Hmm.
So if he's past that, he can't tell you much.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Like me, I was pretty good at maths. But you asked me about applied maths and all that, I didn't know, because I had not reached that stage.
Yeah.
But then he took over the business quite nice. And I left Jinja in 1962. Vinu had to leave the school as well, because the business was picking up, doing quite well. And obviously then Bapuji, Vinu and Jayanti, and we had the staff as well in the shop. And we're doing fairly well. Recovering some of the expenses, but most of it, repayment was going in interest. And then I suppose that was life, you know, you borrowed money, you have to pay interest.
Yeah.
And then Bapuji passed away in 1966, and obviously Jayanti Avenue kept up the repayment of the money, and it was all going well.
Before we go further into the shop life, I mean, I got to see it when we went, right? Where it was, you showed me where the shop was.
Yeah.
But before we get into that, what was schooling like? You also mentioned that you were surprised that the sun would be up at 10 p.m.
In UK.
Yeah. Was the education quite local to Africa? Did...
What, you mean in Jinja?
Hmm.
No, you did history, geography, everything. But obviously... About this sun shining at the you know, sun, okay, you know there are seasons, spring, summer, winter, autumn, winter, all that, but you don't visualize that when they say summer is sunny and all that, realize that the days are longer.
That long, yeah.
Till, you know, I mean, especially when I was 13, and when by road back, if I most probably was 12. So that's why maybe, you know, but obviously we had this. Afterwards we knew when we were in the secondary school and all that, yeah. But other thing, yeah, I forgot to tell. In 1953, after we moved to this bigger shop, till then we used to live in town. But I wanted to have a detached house of our own. And he had seen one being built. And that was about a mile and a half out of town, which used to be, you know, quite far in those days. But he had put his mind to it and he went for it. And I think it was 130,000 shillings in those days. We moved in and all the friends and people thought, rich lot. But it was not rich. It was just, he was a kind of a guy who would always believe, if you want something, you have to go for it. He said, go for the sky, you end up at least on the treetop.
Mm.
And that was his motto, always go for big. And all his friends used to be all rich, loaded guys. So anyway, that's that. I forgot to tell you. School, you know, it was obviously, it was all our schools were run by British. So history, geography, English literature, English language, everything was in English. Only language we used, Gujarati, was in Gujarati. The rest of all the subjects were in English. And even Swahili, I think, came long, long after. Or you might say just before the independence.
Yeah.
There was no Swahili in the school. Because obviously, you know, it was, what do you call it? Not colony. Kenya was colony. This was Uganda was protectorate.
And would it be mainly foreigners, non-ethnic Africans, or even
mostly foreigners? Yeah. Towards the end, I would say after about towards the end of 50s, there were more and more Africans were coming in the school. Yeah. And when I left in 62, I had at least 6 or 7 black guys and girls in my class. And some of them used to come from outside, where their fathers are either farmers and a bit richer than the average person.
Mm, yeah.
They used to send their kids. And we moved in 50. So in 1950, there were only one primary school, one secondary school. By the end of 50s, we had, 2 primary school, 2 secondary school. The main was the Naranbhai. It was an Indian name, Naranbhai Primary School, then it was just a secondary school.
And when you socialized, either in school or outside school, would there be a lot of socializing with the local children? Or would you mainly, you know, with your family and other Indians?
In my time, we stuck to us Indians, you know.
Yeah.
Indian Gujaratis and all men. And moreover, you know, after school or in recess and all that, we always talked in Gujarati language. But there were some guys who used to, like Africans, you know, who didn't speak, then we would speak in English, yes. But mainly we talked in Gujarati, especially going out with friends in the evenings and all that. So socializing with the locals was not that much, I must agree. In the shop, we had Africans working. I can't imagine, you know, you being rude to them or what. But mixing was quite okay. We used to, I was too young. I never went to bars and things. But before I left in 1962, I was almost 20, so I had been to bars. And you sit with African boys there and talk and chat and have a beer together, and that was fine.
Yeah.
So I would say mixing had started, but only in the beginning. Very beginning, when I was very little, you know, it was because there were no Africans in the school.
Yeah, yeah.
Simple as that. In the small villages, there were schools, obviously, with all Africans. But in towns and that, it was mainly Indians or Europeans or other foreigners, you know, South Africans were there, yeah.
And how about funny stories of you with your brothers and sisters?
Well, we were very close to each other and, you know, some fun and mistakes and stories going on all the time.
You told me once about how you would go into the jungles and catch the lizards and break their tails off.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, we've done that, you know, we've gone fishing. We have taken the fish out of, you know, and how did we do fishing? With normal paper pins. We bent the paper pin, put some something on it, food or whatever, and put it in nine times. And the only thing, you can't take it out slowly. You have to jerk it so the fish comes flying out. And we used to cook it. In those days, it didn't bother us because you see Africans doing it, so you do it.
Yeah.
Once there was about three or four of us, and there was this, it's like a crocodile, but it's very small. And it was out. Unusually, they don't come out on the land. And we caught it, and we literally tied it and dragged it all the way in the town. Poor thing was bleeding and all that. Now, thinking of it now, I felt bad. That how could we do it? But as kids, you didn't care. And then eventually, some of the Africans killed it.
My God.
Well, what else is in the town? You can't take it back and put it in the water.
Yeah.
Now, it was a wrong thing to do, thinking of it now. But I think we used to go out, some of our friends, and go to somebody's garden. There used to be lots of mango trees. We used to just take a stick, get some mangoes and eat there and then, leave all the rubbish on the ground and leave it. And you come back next day or 3 days later, there is no rubbish left. It's all gone in the ground.
Innocent crimes.
We used to take Mickey out of people, but not to harm anybody.
Yeah.
Like you get people here, they break into somebody's car and this and that, or throw a stone in somebody's window. No, we never did that. I remember once there was one European's house. It was a detached house with, all closed gardens and all that, with the fence and everything. They used to have these big trees of jackfruit.
Oh, yeah?
And so, you pass by and you can get that fragrance of the jackfruit because it's ripe. And it was quite big. For one person to carry it would be a problem. But we went in there, two of us. We always used to carry a knife. It was no crime carrying a knife in those days. Cut it down, and as we are bringing it out, the African who was supposed to be looking after the house, he came shouting, and we just said, "You should have seen us run with that thing in our hand." And as we passed the fence, he just let us go. He said, "Go away, don't come back." And all about four or five of us, and can you imagine breaking that jackfruit?
Yeah.
It's quite big. I used to do things like that, but that was all innocent thing, not to harm somebody.
Yeah.
Other thing, yes. There were times when few of us used to get up on Sunday at 4 o'clock in the morning, guess what, to chase hippos. Because hippos only come out at night. And there was a golf ground. I think you might remember we went round, from Jinja Club all the way around to go. And I said that was Jinja Club.
Where quite a nice area.
To go play golf and all.
Quite a rich area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rich area. Yeah. There. And there was like a golf ground there, and the hippos would come there. They raised on the grass, and there were some places where they would go in somebody's garden and mess it up. We used to go chasing them because, when I say chase, they can chase you as well.
Yeah.
They are more dangerous coming up the hill than going down.
I've heard, yeah, they're very dangerous.
They are very scared of falling down. If they fall, they're gone. So, but when they are coming up, you mess around with them, they run. And there had been few times when you fall down, you don't want to get up, and you start saying, "Oh God, help me, oh God, help me." It's happened to them. But they were, again, like I said, innocent. And there was one time when there was lots of robberies going on. And there was this Indian policeman, and he was on duty that night. And when we used to get up, we used to go and say, "You are coming out with me, I'll come near your home and I'll blow a certain type of whistle tune, and you know I'm there." And going away, and it was mostly some music, Indian record music tune. And you know I'm out, so you'll come out. And this policeman, somehow, he thought there was something funny going on, so he whistles the same tune. And he's following us. We didn't know. Till one of the guy came out of his house, and he grabbed hold of him. So, "What the hell are you doing?" And I tell you, we were so scared that next day he's going to tell our parents and we're going to be in a right mess. But lucky enough, he talked to us, all of us. We said, we're just going out to see kiboko's and all that. Kiboko means, you know, what did I say?
Hippo.
Hippos. And he let us go. And we were worried that even next day he'll come in the shop and tell my parents that he's caught me at 4 o'clock in the morning. But nothing happened. But this kind of illness and mischiefs we used to do, yes. I tell you, life was fantastic there. You didn't worry too much about, you know, somebody beating you up or... there was no such thing. I mean, we used to roam around till, okay, our time of coming home was 7 o'clock. Half 7, you had to be home and all that. But no fear of somebody is going to, you know, beat you up on the way or anything like that.
Yeah.
And then I think that's how it was.
Would you say you were quite mischievous siblings? Ooh,
mischievous family in school as well. And most of the teachers used to know me. Oh, he used to say, once I remember one of the teachers, very nice guy. He always used to pick on the clever students. People like me playing mischief. He said, you see, this is good. He would tell the other guy, who's cleverer than me, that look, this guy always playing mischief, but he's... when it comes to concentration, he's concentrated. But only study and no mischief is no good either. Yeah. This teacher was such a nice fellow. And he used to be so good at remembering names. And always used to tell me, Dinesh, you have to study as well. Only mischief is no good. Otherwise, I'll tell your dad.
Yeah.
And that was the relation between dad and teachers. And if once a teacher says to a dad, that your son failed this time, you are in trouble.
Yeah, Upin said that there was a very close relation between the parents and the teachers.
Oh, yes. They would trust each other. If the teacher, if by any chance you've done something wrong, if teacher by any reason, if he hits you, you go home and you complain, you get another one. Because teacher don't hit you unless you really done something wrong. That is how teachers were respected. Well, teachers were at school, we used to play mischief with, I know one teacher we had to, it was the wrong thing to do, but that teacher always used to wear the same suit all the way through the week. One of our friends, he had a habit, as the teacher's passing him, he'll, you know, put some ink on his back of his jacket.
Oh, yeah.
So he, every time his next day he comes, and then he'll say, oh, sir, he's got the same jacket on. He's got the same jacket on. And that sort of mischief we did, yes. Not nice, but I don't suppose you can go into the school and not do anything.
Like you said, not anything that causes any harm to anyone.
No harm. No just physical harm or anything like that. You know, like no breaking of anybody's car or anything. I said, we never ever did that.
And you see in schools here, you know, sometimes you get really abusive children, especially towards teachers. Where did it all change?
I think it's changed because parents started listening to the children a bit too much and thinking that, my son would never do anything wrong. I can't believe any kid being that naive that he won't do anything wrong. Everybody does something wrong sometime. But in this country, it seems if teachers got less right to say things to kids than what in our days it was. Our days, you cannot mess around with teachers.
Yeah.
Teachers, I think, used to beat up or punish the kid more than the parents. And it was just known fact.
Yeah.
He will only do it because you've done something wrong. And who sees you more? Teacher.
Yeah.
Because when you go to school, you are there from 8:30 till 12:30. That's 4 hours. Plus you go in the afternoon from 2 to 4. And another 2 hours. So 6 hours a day, a teacher sees you. And your parents, because they have to go to work and all that, they only see you in the morning and in the evening.
Mm.
So they have to be told what they are doing, what their kids are doing in the school.
Yeah.
If they are not doing well, you have to tell them that they is not doing well. So, not question of punishing, but do something so you can concentrate on these things.
It's the idea that you get up to mischief where you know the risk is you could get caught and then told off for it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then again, like I said, we do mischief, but not to harm somebody, or, you know, you don't go around beating up teachers.
Yeah.
Two or three of you get together to beat up the teacher because he punished you once. Now, that was completely out. No, impossible. Nobody would do that. Very, very high respect for teachers. Even now, if I bet you, if I meet one of my old teachers, I would respect him so much. It's just, it gets in your system. The teacher is somebody you have to respect, because without him, you won't get the knowledge. You know, this is how it's been pushed into the kids. That it is the teachers who give you more knowledge than your family.
That's interesting. So they had quite a high level of authority.
Really? Yeah.
So back to the shop, given that the shop was the largest in Jinja, do you think it did a lot for your reputation of your family in the town?
Oh, it did. Very much. Because, as I said, my father, Babuji, used to be very, very good at doing things for the society. It's like, you know, my Bane Danjifua, you know, my brother-in-law, he was similar in Kisumu. Did a lot of things for the society.
Hmm.
He would go and look up, you know, go and help out in the boarding schools, in the schools, even in the temples, places like that where, you know, public uses it more. There were some places in Jinja, where they conduct marriages and all that. Now, somebody has to look after that place.
Yeah.
That it is in a good nick and all that. Babuji used to do that. Then there was a boarding school where the kids, and I know some of my classmates used to say, your dad, such a nice guy, but he's quite strict when he decides to tell you off. Though he won't raise his hand to anyone and beat or slap or anything. But he would make them sit down and talk to them nicely. That the guy would think twice before he does the same thing again. One of my old classmates once told me they were playing football in the corridor. Hmm. And he broke a glass and my dad really told him off. And he said, "Your dad, I've never seen your dad lose temper, but this time he had, because it was the damage that was done."
Yeah. Strict but fair.
Yeah. Same thing even with us brothers, when we sit, because lunchtime, we always used to sit on the table, all of us.
Hmm.
We go from school, they come from the shop, and always there is something going on, like Ashwin, Prakash, me sitting there, and somebody will pass a comment, and you know, you can't just burst out laughing. And the more you try to stop laughing, you keep, you know, that if you're going to burst out. And all of a sudden, you get up and move out of the room, and then come back as if you're going to get something, because you want to get it out of your system. Prakash, Ashwin had a lot of that. They always used to pull each other's tail, like.
Yeah.
Little jokes used to go on all the time, you know, double meaning thing. Once I remember there was a new chewing gum, bubble gum or chewing gum had come out, where you get, in the packet, you get actors or actresses' photograph, cinema actor, actresses' photograph.
Okay.
And the kids used to go mad just to collect the photographs. And once one of the guy comes in the shop, he said, "Uncle, have you got this chewing gum?" So there were no more left. Ashwin was behind the counter, and Prakash walks in as a customer. He said, "Kaka, chewing gum chhe?" Then Ashwin said, "Ketli var kidu? Khalas thai gayi chhe. Khotu khotu mathu khai chhe. Tike kaka jo ne chewing gum chhe?" And Babuji was sitting there on his desk, you know, doing his paperwork. And he looks up. And when he saw Prakash talking to Ashwin, he burst out laughing. And I tell you, never seen Babuji laugh like that.
Really?
Because he was going to tell the kid off. That kid, how many times told you that, look, there are no more chewing gum left? And then he looks at it and it was Prakash. They were just pulling each other's legs. And Babuji started laughing like mad.
Do you think the way Babuji was about being very helpful to the community, do you think that really rubbed off on you siblings?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Since I've been in this country, I've helped so many people out. And, you know, it's not something you help somebody or you say, if I help you, thinking, when I need you, you're going to help. No, that doesn't come into it.
Hmm.
If you want to help somebody, you help. Like I helped my friend Balu, when, you know, though I came here in 62 and I was told, or Balu, my friend, told Bapuji and Jayanti Bhai that, oh, Dinu has got no problem. He's going to stay with us in the family. So he's got, at least doesn't have to worry about the expenses.
Yeah.
It won't be that bad. And I came here, end of the week, his father come up and said £4 for boarding and lodging.
Crazy.
I didn't know what to say. And Balu was there, and even he was confounded. He said, what's dad doing? But couldn't say anything to his dad. Hmm. That was the life. You don't talk against your dad. And I said, now, that's it. If I have to, I didn't say a word. And I just said, okay, there you are. And all I used to get is £20 a month from home.
Wow.
So £4 to him, nothing. Okay. Even then, I mean, anybody else in my place either would have said, oh, bugger it. I think I'll go better go back to Jinja. No, I still had that in me that, no, I've made my brother and Papuji take all that pain to send me here, though we could not afford it. And they said, we'll send you £20 a month because you're going to stay in Balu's house, so there's no expense. Okay, you pay certain expenses and all that, but not like normal boarding and lodging. But I pay it now. So it used to be £16 a month, 4 weeks, and another month is 5 weeks, and you have to pay all of it. So I very rarely went out.
Hmm.
And, you know, I had applied for the exams here, and I took biology, English language, maths, and Gujarati. And then I said, I passed only in two and I failed in two. I said, no, I can't keep doing it. So I gave up. And next thing, started studying in the house. Couldn't go out because couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
But after then I was there, what, March, April, May. In June, he wanted me to pay £4 and 10 shillings instead of £4. There would be £22 a month. And I said, I'm only getting 20. Where am I going to? That's when. But I never broke up with Balu, even then.
Yeah.
Because I could not turn around and think, you know, he should do something. Because it was same with me. If I was in his place, I wouldn't have got to tell my dad, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And he was the same. So I kept up. But when he asked for more, then I said, I have to do something. So I phoned him. Upin's mama, Bharat, another good friend, you know, who was in the school, who was my first friend in Jinja, they come to my rescue. He was, at the time, he was in West Norwood, in South London. And he said, come down here, it's still £4, you know, boarding, lodging, both. There was a nice German lady, used to run a cafe and look after students because the Norwood Technical College was 5 minutes walk. So I went there and I didn't still break up with Balu Uncle, because to me he was a friend. Now, most people would say, oh, that's it. It's got me here under false pretenses and all that. No, I said, I still felt, no. As a friend, he's a friend. If I can help him, fine. If he can help him, fine. But if we can't, doesn't mean we are enemies.
What made you want to, or what made you decide to leave Jinja in the first place to come here?
I had never even dreamt of leaving. Okay. It was Balu's family had come over. His father came over here. And then slowly his family joined him. And he was the last person to come. Like, you know, Prakash and Vinu uncle were the last in our family to come to England.
Yeah.
But we came here before the people were thrown out. So when Balu was gone, he felt so bad. You know, leaving Jinja, and, you know, we were such close friends. There was not one day where we weren't together.
Mm.
School together, then even after school, we meet in the evening, go for a walk and all that. And he persuaded Jayanti Bhai and Bapuji to send me with them. So he said, why are you worried about it? You know, he's going to stay in our house, so he's got no expenses. And we've been friends such a long time, and I will really miss him. And we'll do something. They could see, Jayanti Bhai and Bapuji, that I was pretty keen to come over as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they eventually said, okay, fine. And mind you, to be able to afford the money in those days was difficult because we were still paying for bikes you know, expenses. Babuji had done the borrowing, but I wasn't supposed to know that anyway. So Ba had some money, like any Indian woman always keeps some money saved up for rainy day. And she took £70, I still remember. In those days it was 1400 shillings, because a pound was 20 shillings. And the ticket was 1400 shillings. It was a new chartered flight that had started. Now, it wasn't a chartered flight. It was more like a tour. It took 4 days for us to get here. Nile Star. Yeah, Nile Star. And it was the first experiment they were doing, coming via a road, train, plane, and boat. Because it was cheap. £70 in, you know, for the flight. Because those days, flights were very expensive. And, well, we decided to come. We came from Jinja, went to Tororo. From Tororo, we took a taxi to Juba, which is, Juba is in near Khartoum.
Okay.
From Juba, we took a plane to Luxembourg. From Luxembourg, we took a boat to Dover. From Dover, we took a train to London.
So it no was direct flight.
Yeah. It was meant to be 3 days, but being first one, they didn't know. But it took 4 days, and we got there in the end. And that was the reason I came here. Otherwise, I couldn't have even dreamt that I would ever go to England, let alone England, even to Nairobi for studies.
And was it common? You said that Balu uncle came, but was it common for other people to leave to go and study abroad?
Oh, yeah, but that was only from the rich people. Okay. You know, I mean, when I say rich, you had to be rich to send your son to England. Because I know some of the guys who were big farmers. They had, you know, this sugarcane farm and the peanut thing where, you know, they make the oil and really big farmer. They used to send their kids. And we always, when they came back to Jinja, we always used to call them, oh, UK return has come. UK return, we used to call them.
Returnees.
Yeah, UK return. But because they were obviously there was a bit of jealousy as well because we couldn't afford to do it.
Yeah.
And never worried about it. But, you know, obviously when you want to take a piece out of somebody, you do that.
Yeah, you give them a nickname.
And there were some people who were quite friendly as well. So it would be nice. And I had few friends who had come to England and back to Jinja. They got on well. But the jealousy would always be there because it's a human nature. If you got more than I have, then obviously I feel, I wish I had that. I was not much into that. That's why, you know, coming back to the same story, Balu uncle and all that. I left and then in 1968, I was working in Victoria as a TV engineer. And I used to meet him once a week, regular, mostly on Wednesdays. Because where I used to work, it was half day Wednesday closing. So I used to go there. Oh yeah, by that time I had bought a car as well. How much? £10.
Wow.
I paid £10 for a car. And I used to take that car from where I was working in Victoria. And my college, as I said, was in West Norwood. I used to go from Victoria to West Norwood. I used to take a bus, but then when I bought the car, I used to take the car. And once Balu uncle, myself, and his girlfriend, we even went on 1966, at the time of the World Cup football,
yes,
with Germany. Yeah, we went away for a week to a place in Kent. Sheerness, yeah, very small place. And we saw the football there. And we used to see him. Then once he phoned me, he said, I got a proposal for you. I said, what? He said, there is a shop going. I want to get into the shop. But you know, my dad, he won't give me money. So I said, okay, I got some, I'll lend you. He said, no, I want you to come with me as a partner, because you see, he was playing it right, because I had a bit of experience in the grocery shop, because from Jinja.
Yeah.
Well, I said, look, I've done this electrical thing, TV engineer and all that. He said, well, you come with me for as long as you want, and then once I get the hang of it, you can go. So I said, okay, fine. Guess how much we used to draw wages? £7.10 a week.
A week.
Wow.
Why? Because we wanted to build up the business. Then I stayed there for about a year. By that time, I had finished my TV engineering first grade. And we used to get a diploma. I still got it here somewhere. And I said, right, Balu, now I think here is long enough. I think I better go out. I said, I spent 5 years doing evening classes to learn this. And I'm a qualified TV engineer. I don't want to do this. So he said, okay. Then he paid me back that money. I had put £900 in it.
Mm.
And that wasn't my money. That was family money. He paid me over 3 years, £25 a month. Not a penny on interest or anything. My friendship. To me, it was a friend. I was helping a friend. That's it, simple.
Yeah.
Word of mouth, and that's it. Still, you know, we were good friends. Then I started, and lucky enough, I got the job very close to the shop was. So even then, I used to finish work and then go and help him out because the shop, we used to close at 7. And I used to finish work at 6. Still, I will go and help him out. And we meet every evening, close the shop, play darts, have a pint, and go home.
So still have time for...
Oh, yes. For friends, I had a lot of time. I didn't drink much in those days. One pint was enough. And I used to help him out. Then he paid me back and all that, fine. Then, oh yeah, meanwhile, he had been to India and got married and came back and all that. And then I started this TV business. Then he was doing okay. Well, like I said, we used to meet often. Then I just felt I had to have my own business. Then Jayantibai came over in 71 with the family. Like Upin told you, you know, I had got the grocery shop for them and set it up. I was still working for TV engineer. I took 3 weeks off then for my holidays and helped him out start the shop because he came here on Sunday morning, picked them, the family up from the airport, came home, he had something to eat, then I took him straight to the shop while the stock taking was being done. And from Monday, he was in the shop. He didn't have a day here to himself, you know. But I was living in Barnet. And his shop was in Barking. I used to take them from Barnet to Barking every day for 3 weeks. And I helped him, and I stayed in the shop.
That's not close.
No. Mind you, in those days, traffic was not like nowadays. It used to take an hour.
Okay.
1 hour going, 1 hour coming. And obviously, he didn't have any transport, and I used the car that I was supplied by the work, which I was supposed to use. I could use, you know, privately. I wasn't even meant to take. I was only allowed 2 weeks holiday at a time and then 1 week. Altogether 3 weeks, but not 3 weeks at the same time. And I was told, no, you can't take 3 weeks straight like that and all that. So I said, my family comes first. So I said to the manager, I'm sorry. In that case, I'll leave the job.
Wow.
No. Anand, you won't believe, but the family meant something.
Yeah.
I said, okay, I'll leave the job. I knew I was too confident, you might say, that to find a job is like that. There were a lot of rental companies, you know, to renting television, so I knew I would. But then he said, no. And he said, don't worry, I'll work something out. Then he worked it out, and I took 3 weeks. In those 3 weeks, I helped them out, and we had to find a place near Barking for them to move. We even found a flat. We found a flat, they moved there, and then I went to work after 3 weeks at my... But I used to work 5 days a week. So one day off I used to go to the shop for months and months.
That's amazing.
I said, Anand, family means such a lot.
Yeah.
Anything, family came first. I mean, you most probably have seen myself, Prakash uncle, Ashwin uncle, we more friends than... You know, brothers,
yeah.
When we get together, you know, joking, this. But when it comes to family, it is first.
Yeah, it's something that I said in the beginning, and it's one of the reasons that I was so interested to do this, was because of, through everything, how close the family have always been.
When I went back in 1964, no, second time, 1968, all five brothers, we were together. Myself, Prakash, Ashwin, Janji, Pai, Vinu, and a friend, Subhas. Five of us went to a club where Janji Pai was a member. And, you know, only members allowed, but members can take guests. We went there, and Janji Pai went to the counter and ordered six beers. And this Subhas, friend of mine, he said, "Do you drink with your brothers? You drink in front of him." I said, "So what? We are all over 21. So what's so special?" And he had a tear in his eye. He said, "I have never sat down with my brother this way and had a glass of Coca-Cola, let alone beer." Amazing. He said, "What are you? What kind of people are you, brothers or friends?" I said, "Friends, brothers first, friends next."
Yeah.
I said, "Now, I respect my brothers, but this thing is normal. I used to smoke, but I never smoked in Janji Bhai's presence or Bhai's presence. I never, but it was just the respect."
Yeah.
Janji Bhai knew I smoked. Once we went together, he used to do traveling. He was a traveling salesman for a while. He used to go out in Uganda and take orders. And I was in Jinja on holiday. And he said, "Why don't you come with me? You're not going to do anything here." So I said, "Yeah, fine." So I took a packet of cigarette and put it in the glove compartment. I said, "Whenever I get a chance, I'll have a quick smoke." And as soon as we left Jinja and we went over the bridge, you know, the Owen Falls Dam?
Oh, yeah.
Then he said, "I know you smoke." He said, "I know you respect me that so much that you won't smoke in my presence and blah, blah." I said, "Yes." He said, "Okay, now we are out. I don't mind you smoking. When we come back, if you don't want, okay, be it." But you see, we were that close that he knew I didn't smoke in his presence as a respect. Not because I was hiding or anything, because I was over a certain age. And even then, I could not smoke in front of
him. Yeah.
Whenever we stopped somewhere, he would be taking an order with the, you know, shopkeeper, and I would just go out and have a quick smoke. But that's, to us brothers, it meant more than anything else.
A big thank you for tuning in to part one of my dad's journey as we relived some of his fond memories of life in Jinja before moving to London. As you can imagine, this one means a great deal to me, so I'm truly grateful you've decided to join me in his journey. Keep a lookout for part two, where he carries on with some incredible insights of what life was like in the UK, as well as personal stories and realizations, not just about himself, but also some fond memories of Bar on Bapuji.